Hurricane Gerald, the Boss Man Show. We're here with Dan Devine from The Ringer. Dan is a great writer, man. He has an article you see on his Twitter feed. It's the seven tiers of the NBA after free agency, man. It's really going to be real nice to read, man. If your favorite team is falling to a tier, we're going to discuss all of it with Dan right here on the Boss Man Show. Dan, what's good, brother?
Enjoying my off season now that we finally got to it, man. But yeah, happy to spend a little few minutes here with you.
Yes, indeed, Dan. I'll start about the first tier, Dan, in your article, man. Playing for ping pong balls. You hit it so well. The Cavs, the Hornets, the Grizzlies. Now, my wife focuses on the Hornets. My thing is this, Dan. If you knew you weren't going to pay Kemba the Supermax money, they should have traded him last offseason or last trade deadline to get a true haul for the organization in Charlotte. Because now you overpay Terry Rozier to pay somebody. You have the bad contracts of Nick Batum and my guy Marvin Williams still there. So it's a team going nowhere fast and being irrelevant real quick in Charlotte there.
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's hard to see it, or you know, it's hard to make that choice too early, right? You know, if you're looking at it and saying we have this all-star player, we drafted Kemba Walker, we developed him, we helped him get sort of make it all the way to where, you know, when he came into the league, he was a guy with a nice handle and a killer crossover, but you know, 40% shooter, a guy that couldn't knock down the long ball, and then becomes a legit 25 point a game scorer. You know, you don't want to get rid of that guy. You've invested all this time and energy in him. He led you during that one big playoff year they had where they won 48 games. And there was a sense that, like, you got to build around him. You make him the focal point. Everything works around him. But obviously, they sort of swung and missed after 2016. They paid Nick Batum. They paid Marvin Williams. They kept that core together. Extensions for guys like Cody Zeller and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, who just hadn't panned out quite the way they hoped. And so that's your best asset, your best player becomes you sort of have to start looking at him like he's your get out of jail free card. And it's an unfortunate fact of life, but if you're looking at it and saying, how do we get out of salary cap jail? How do we wind up restocking the coffers with young talent, with draft picks to give ourselves a plan B for the future? As unfortunate as it is, you got to take a look at moving your best asset that's going to get you the best return. They opted not to do that. They hung on to Kemba Walker. They decided not to go all the way to the Supermax once he made it to all NBA or even, you know, even close to it. And he wound up deciding he wanted to make another decision, go to a different situation for the remainder of his prime. The end result is, you know, there's Miles Bridges, there's Malik Monk. Now they drafted PJ Washington this year. They bring in Terry Rozier. Maybe there's the outlines of a youth movement there that can get you somewhere exciting, but it seems to me like they're a team that's a few pieces away and probably not going to be in contention for much beyond the number one pick anytime soon.
At least the Cavs and Grizzlies have a plan. They have young talent, new coaching, a youth movement. They have key pieces to build around in Memphis with Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. And you got Darius Garland out there in Cleveland also with Sexton. So you have pieces in Cleveland and Memphis that make you feel like, okay, in a few years, they'll be good, following the Hawks track here in Atlanta of the rebuild of Hawks doing it as we speak.
Yeah, and also, you know, for Cleveland, they still have one of those chips left to play. I'm not sure exactly what the market is for Kevin Love at this stage. They extended him last offseason. If nothing else, you lock in a price point. You know what he's going to be. You know, he's not going to hit the market for another 3 years, I believe. He's under contract with a four-year extension, and you know what it's going to cost you. I think the money goes down after a couple of years, so it's still expensive, but it's not going to be in the way that, you know, some all-NBA caliber guys are going to be getting $44, $45 million. He's not going to be at that kind of price range. Still a stretch big man, still a playmaking power forward who can play some center too. So he might be one of those guys, you know, now that a lot of the big names have moved, you know, guys like him, like Bradley Beal, who are sort of like that next tier down, who might still wind up being the kind of player, if you're a team that says, we're maybe one player away, we don't need a super duper star, but we could be one player away from making some real noise in a more wide open NBA than we've seen in a long time. Beal might be that kind of guy you look at, and the Cavs might be able to say, hey, if Kevin Love stays healthy for, you know, the first half of the season, we got one of those guys too. We can make a real difference for you. We know what's your bid for. What are you going to be able to put up on a table that'll help us in terms of young talent or draft capital? But it really has to start with you got to hit, you know, hit some home runs in the draft. You got to put together a few of those young pieces, and then sort of see where you are in a couple of years' time with your development. Ideally, from a young coach that can sort of put some things together. John Beilein is going to get the chance to do that in Cleveland. You know, James Borrego is going to get the chance to do that in Charlotte. And I think Memphis, you know, they sort of changed everything. Brand new front office, brand new new coach Taylor Jenkins, who had been on Mike Budenholzer's staff in Milwaukee, and they're going to hand the keys over to a couple 20-year-olds, and they got some exciting young talent. I think their runway to get back towards sort of being competitive might be a little shorter than those other teams, but still a long way to go. I think that's why those teams, as they go forward this season, everything's going to be about building toward the future. They don't got to worry about wins and losses right now, just about getting better.
And in your next tier, you have not so bad, but still going to the lottery. I agree with that. The Hawks, Wizards, Suns, and Knicks. The Wizards, if Bradley Beal declines that extension, trying to trade him away from Washington, start all over. And here in Atlanta with the Hawks, I tell the fans here that, hey, yeah, we're young, but when you're young, you're not that very good. It'll be exciting. It'll be a good league pass to watch for the rest of the league, but we won't be that good. We'll still be young and fun, but not that good.
Well, and I think they're honestly a team that when I was sort of trying to break out the organization of the league, they were pretty close to me to that next tier up of like, you know, hey, they might be frisky. They might be able to get into that mix for an 8 seed. In part because I believe in the talent that's there. I believe in Trae Young. I believe in John Collins, who, you know, still, you know, he had some national love last year, but still one of the better young players that not a lot of people talk about in the league at this stage. You know, Kevin Huerter showed flashes last year. I think, you know, there's reasons to be excited about what DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish can do as they sort of fill in. And then the guys that were sort of like reclamation projects that wound up rebuilding some value. Like DeAndre Bembry is a guy that a lot of people didn't pay a whole lot of attention to, but that's a junkyard dog kind of dude that'll do a little bit of everything for your roster. It's great to, you know, and he can fit into a few different spaces and really help out. And Alex Len, all of a sudden, it's like, oh yeah, that guy was the top, you know, 6 or 7 pick, and then winds up, you know, eating a lot of innings for you at the center spot. So I think there's a lot of guys, or the coaching staff under Lloyd Pierce that's showing it can get a lot out of young guys. It's a lot of young guys who got a lot of reps last season, took a step forward. But, you know, progress isn't always a straight line going up in the NBA. And you're relying on so many guys who are, you know, 22, 23 years old and younger to develop consistently, to produce consistently night after night. That can be a tough thing to bank on night in and night out. But I think if any of these teams in these sort of in the lower reaches of these tiers is going to be surprised pleasantly and bump up a notch, I would bet on it being the Hawks, because I think that's not just the talent, but the way the talent fits makes a whole lot of sense to me, and I think there is a lot to be excited about in Atlanta.
Yes, indeed. I'll tell you, in 2 years, we'll be really good. 2021, we'll be really, really good. I guarantee that, for sure. And now, the frisky young teams, you have the Bulls, Pelicans, Kings, T-Wolves, and Mavs. I want to focus on the Pelicans because I feel like the lottery helped that team retool on the fly. A lot of the Clippers did, because you're the number one pick. Like the Lakers pick bumped up for you too. So also the Hawks traded away a lot to get Hunter. So you got a lot of draft picks in New Orleans. You've got to sign quality veterans, and you got to retool on the fly with a good roster. You know, telling about all those guys from the Lakers with Zion, Jackson Hayes, Alexander as well, signing Redick as well. So David Griffin put together a pretty interesting roster in the Western Conference that's young and could make some noise.
I completely agree, and I think that it's David Griffin has made a lot of, you know, he's basically had every opportunity since he got that job, since they made the draft pick of Zion Williamson since draft night, talked about it. You know, it's not him. It's not just him. It's not all on him. We got to build an infrastructure. We got to build a culture where it's everybody pointing in the right direction. We're not putting everything on the shoulders of this young man. You know, maybe learning from the mistakes or from the failings of what happened with Anthony Davis, where it was, yeah, we'll put some quote-unquote young veterans around him, but if those guys aren't able to elevate him, then he's got to elevate everybody, and that's an awfully tall task for a young guy, no matter how talented. So instead of it saying, well, we think Zion's transformational, so we'll just kind of like, you know, we won't really aim for strategic moves around him. It's, all right, well, we're going to go get Derek Favors. So he can, you got like a big brute, like a dog that can play center and is going to, you know, lock down the paint, can, you know, get you a bucket with his back to the basket, pick and roll big man, going to cover up things on the defensive end. So, you know, Zion, you don't worry about that so much. You come in, you fly in for blocks and steals, get out in transition, but the paint's controlled. Drew Holiday is going to be the captain up at the top of the floor on both ends of the floor. going to get you fed, going to make sure that you're, you know, you're in position to make plays on both ends. Don't worry about it. You need some space to operate, drive and face up to the basket. Get J.J. Redick. Bring him in here. He's going to be flying off screens. Defense can't leave him alone. He's going to open things up with the shooting. And you're going to have some young guys to go along with you, with Jackson Hayes, with Alexander Walker. You know, and we'll see how the how all the pieces from the Lakers show up. I mean, I'm a believer in Brandon Ingram's talent. I'm not so sure about the fit. He seems like a guy that works best with the ball in his hands. Lonzo seems like he can do an awful lot to make a team better. It's really just, you know, but the shot, the consistency on that, and the consistency of being able to be on the floor, of staying healthy, we haven't seen that a whole lot through his first couple of seasons. So, you know, it remains to be seen what those guys are going to look like in a new context. But I think the overall talent level, the increase in what they were able to do, just increasing the talent level and the fit around Zion, I think there's some pretty exciting things there. It wouldn't surprise me if that was pretty much right away because they built with some veterans too, some guys who know how to win in this league. It wouldn't surprise me if they were sniffing around a playoff spot too. But a lot of that's going to depend on how well those young guys come along, how quickly, and how much they can stay on the floor.
And you also have on the fringes the Orlando Magic, who I think just overpaid to keep everybody intact because I just think they're going to be getting much better. The Pistons, the Spurs, the Thunder, that has a team that's. It's kind of, if you keep Chris Paul, yeah, kind of be okay, but we know they're not going to really win anything. But Indiana's team, I really want to focus on there, Dan, because of this. Depends on how Victor comes back from that injury. That's like getting a mid-season acquisition of a star. If you bring him back to that mix, like if he's who we think he can be, I mean, that could make that team go to another level right there in Indiana. And coach, because you know Nate McMillan's going to coach them very, very well. He's going to play hard and defend well. So if you get Victor back, it's half what he was or close to what he can be. It can be, help them go up to the standards in the East there.
Yeah, you know, they're a fascinating team to me because I think as much as maybe any of the teams that I wrote about, the spread in opinion on them was really wide. You know, there are some people that thought, looked at that and said, like, that's straight up disrespectful to Indiana. Indiana should be up in, like, the solid playoff teams or even, like, conference finals. Like, that with where they've been the last couple of years, winning 48 games, you know, consecutive years, with what the job Nate McMillan's done, the talent they added, they should be even higher. And then I had the responses from some people that said, look at all they lost. You know, it's not just that Oladipo is going to be out for at least half the season. It's you're also, you know, Bojan Bogdanović, the guy that was their number one scorer when he went out, he's gone now. You know, they're sort of turning the reins over to Malcolm Brogdon, but we'll see if he's ready to be a lead creator. He never had to do that in Milwaukee. You bring in, you know, sort of all these new pieces. T.J. Warren comes in. Jeremy Lamb comes in from Charlotte. And there's all this sort of shuffling. And it's, you know, we still don't know for sure how well Miles Turner and Domantas Sabonis fit together. There's a lot of sort of moving parts there, but I agree with you. I think that there's a really, if you get Oladipo back, say, I mean, the timetable now, and that could shift, but timetable now is they're saying, last I saw was about to, like, December, January. So say he comes back around New Year's, right? You get some, you know, a little bit of time to sort of get the rust off through the All-Star break. Then you start developing rhythm as you get it, you know, into May, to March and April. By the time the playoffs come around, you could have just added an all-NBA caliber two-way star. And I think, you know, that could be the kind of infusion that in an Eastern Conference, it's a little bit shaky beyond the first couple teams. You know, that could carry you a long way. So a fully healthy version of that team with Brogdon alongside Oladipo in the backcourt, with Lamb on the wing, with Warren in there to get buckets, I think there's a really intriguing team in there. How often they can get to it with everybody in rhythm and healthy, I think that's going to be a really big question in the East this season.
In the playoff teams with questions, you have the Raptors. You also have the Celtics, the Heat, and the Warriors, and the Nets as well. So what's about the Warriors here, Dan? They trade for D'Angelo Russell just to say they didn't want to lose nothing for Kevin Durant for nothing. But you lose Andre Iguodala for it, Livingston for it, of course, as well. But you kind of bring in some fringe guys, Glenn Robinson III. You know, you bring in a guy like Cauley Stein as well. You got Looney back as well. So I feel like the Warriors deal with it the best they could, being hard capped with that Russell trade. But I feel like the Russell is just a piece to trade later. Also, to get ready that when Iguodala got that trade exception with Andre Iguodala with Memphis. So I feel like they have two pieces to kind of retool again and kind of just be a down year for them if Clay even comes back in March still. But I'm looking at them next year after that with those two pieces, they can really be dangerous once more again.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think, you know, it's there. I would never – you're never going to count out a team that's going to be able to go into war night after night with Steph Curry and Draymond Green. You know, like that is an instant offense and an instant defense right there. So there's a certain competitive level that you expect that the Golden State to maintain. But just about everything else is in flux. You know, there are bodies on the wing now, but this almost all of them are unproven. We don't really know yet. I mean, D'Angelo Russell being a starting shooting guard and a, you know, night-to-night guarding opposing two guards, you know, we got to see how that works. I don't know. I'm pretty unsure how that's going to play out. Willie Cauley-Stein is he's got all the physical tools you could ask for to be an impact defender, a lockdown center, rim protector, the whole bit. Never really put all that together in Sacramento, and you know, seemed to wear out his welcome there at different times. Put himself in the doghouse, with a variety of different coaches. Maybe some stability in a context alongside stable vets like Steph and Draymond brings the best out of a guy like that. Helps bring along some of those younger guys, the new influx of talent, the rookies they bring in. You know, guys like Jordan Poole and Eric Pascal, and you know, so on and so forth, as they try to build out, you know, get younger, build out the talent on that roster. But it does feel a little bit like they're sort of in a state of wait and see. If you get MVP Steph and Defensive Player of the Year Draymond, yeah, maybe you're right back in the mix for a three seed or four seed in the West, maybe even more. Who knows? But I think for right now, the expectation is like it's going to take a while to figure out what the new normal looks like in Golden State on both ends of the floor, and sort of see where you get to when Clay comes back, and you know, what kind of push you can make, and then set yourself up for the next season and beyond.
And that's the conference finals of bust. Philadelphia, Denver, the Rockets, the Jazz, and the Blazers. I want to hit the Rockets and the Sixers. The Sixers signed my guy Al Horford to a nice contract. I was shocked. When he opted out, Dan, I'm like, what are you doing, Al? But when I saw the deal he got, you had something going, brother. More power to you. You know, my man. Good job. So we got the big four of Philadelphia with Ben Simmons, Embiid there, Tobias Harris. To me, it means, Dan, Ben Simmons must shoot more than layups and dunks. He has to, you know, because without Redick there, there's no space. And without Butler, who is the closer, you need somebody to close now. And it can't be Tobias Harris, or can it be Ben Simmons, or Embiid in the post? We don't know. Barry Brown's figured that out. And also with the Rockets, of course, the trade, Russ and Harden. I don't see how that works because Russ can't shoot, especially in the playoffs, when teams can say, hey, we'll just sack up on James and Derrick Russell Westbrook to shoot corner threes, and he ain't gonna like be happy doing that probably. So I see that be combustion fast as well. So what are your thoughts on the Sixers and the Rockets here?
Yeah, the Sixers, I think you hit the nail on the head. The question for them is going to be on offense, how they make the pieces fit, and who has the keys at the end of the game. Because that's what we, you know, for all the drama and the storms that came last year after Jimmy Butler showed up, when the money was on the table in the playoffs, who had the ball in his hands? It was Jimmy Butler creating at the end of games, running high pick and roll with Joel Embiid, trying to make something happen, or trying to, you know, work out in isolation and beat somebody to get a good shot. And, you know, with Ben Simmons basically like hanging out around the foul line, you know, waiting for offensive rebounds or dump offs. And that, you know, obviously the moving Jimmy Butler in the sign and trade that brings back Josh Richardson, that removes that as an option. And obviously Ben Simmons, you know, the max salary extension that Ben Simmons got, it's, hey, we trust you, we believe in you, we're going to put the ball in your hands, put the keys in your hands. So now it's a matter of, you know, you got to show you can do something more with it. And maybe it's not just that you can take those jumpers. Maybe it is that no matter what a defense does, you're going to get to your preferred spot and get to, you know, where you need to go, make things happen for others. Maybe the answer is the ball winds up in Horford's hands more often at the end of games. It's a creator because he's somebody that can pick passes out, that can stretch the floor. You know, maybe it's just no matter what happens, you're going to flood, basically 1-4 and get away from Embiid, let him isolate on one side of the floor and throw everybody else on the other side, make him, you know, make defenses try to double him and let him be a passer. You know, maybe he takes a step forward as a creator and that opens things up. But I expect them to be, if not the best defensive team in the league, then one of them. And then it's all going to be about what Simmons and Embiid and Horford can kind of do to coalesce offensively and make things work there. Horford has been a great player that the level of his greatness has often gone overlooked. And, you know, he's been a big contributor to the successes of several franchises and multiple coaches. I think he's going to make life a lot easier for Brett Brown, if as long as he's on the floor, as he's able to stay healthy. I think that's they're a weird looking team, man. But I'm excited to watch them play. And then, I'm sorry, forgive me. The other one that you asked, Rockets.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I mean, I wrote about that the night, sort of the night that the news broke, because it was like, this is Russell Westbrook's last, not, I shouldn't say last shot, that's not, not the right way to say it, but this is his opportunity to show that all those knocks that you were talking about, like, he can't shoot, he's not going to be able to create in the playoffs when, you know, the other team loads up on Harden, he's not going to be able to be a second fiddle, he's not going to be comfortable with that. He's been a guy who has run off to a MVP-caliber player because of the way he demands everything, and everything has to run through him. This is the opportunity to rewrite that story and to correct that narrative. And I'm interested. I'll say this. I'm interested in what Russell Westbrook looks like attacking against defenses that can't just pack the paint on him because nobody else on his team can shoot. Like, when he would go out there, if he was playing, you know, playing with Paul George, Paul George could shoot. Nobody else on the Thunder could shoot. When he was playing with Kevin Durant, for the most part, Kevin Durant could shoot. Nobody else could shoot. Everybody in Houston can shoot. They're going to put, you know, they're going to have Clint Capela out there setting screens, and then everybody else around the perimeter can, you know, take a kick out and knock down a shot or make something happen off the catch, scramble up a defense. So I wonder if a guy who is already one of the best pick and roll creators in the game, and already a guy that can dust you off the dribble and get to the basket, I wonder if he plays up even a little bit in that system. I think you're absolutely right to note the question of how he fits alongside Harden, because obviously the more Russell Westbrook has the ball, the less James Harden has the ball. And given how good James Harden is at the ball, I don't know that that's the way you want to go. But I think that, you know, the talent is interesting, and the idea that, like, he might not be a fit from a shooting perspective, but the way he creates specific things he does real well with the ball in his hand as he breaks down defenses might be even better accentuated in Houston. So I think there's a shot that looks a little better on the floor than it does in our mind's eye, and I kind of can't wait to get a look at it.
And finally, you have the contenders, the Bucks, Lakers, the Clippers. I want to touch on the Bucks and the Clippers here. The Bucks pretty much reloaded up the roster, except for Brogdon, who went to the Pacers. You brought back, you got Wes Matthews, you brought my man in, Kyle Korver as well, to fast shooting. My thing about watching Coach Mike Budenholzer, I've watched him pretty much get swept out of the playoffs three times, two with the Hawks, but the Cleveland and the Raptors beat them four straight games there. So to me, it's another kind of sweep to me as well. So, like, he doesn't make any adjustments. That's my problem with Budenholzer. He sticks to his system. He doesn't adjust to anything. And so, if you get a series like Philadelphia or even a Boston or Indiana, it could get tough. He's not going to make any adjustments. He's going to believe in his system. And I feel like that the coaching piece is what I worry about with the Milwaukee Bucks, not so much the talent piece. And the Clippers, of course, you had Kawhi and Paul George, the heist of the century, how Kawhi played everybody solid. So I told some people, dancing, look here, Kawhi didn't prove that the guys you hear bloviating on TV don't know what they're talking about. They're just guessing. They just proved it right there with Kawhi. So, yeah, let's get your thoughts on the Clippers and then the Bucks as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Clippers, I mean, you're absolutely right that they have most of the core of a team that was one of the best surprises in the league last year, right? Like, they bring back Lou Will, they bring back Montrezl Harrell, they, you know, Landry Shamet comes back. They have so much of, like all of the sort of complementary pieces that you'd want to put around legit star talent, and then they go get two of, you know, I don't know how, you know, was two of the three or four best two-way players in the sport, and at a time when what wins titles more than anything else is these wings that can create, get to their own shot, create efficient offense, and lock up defensively. You need these guys. This might be the best pair of Dobermans that we've seen since Jordan and Pippen on the court. And, you know, so the idea of the way it can all fit together, I'm really interested in how that can look. The only question for me is just how much those guys play. You know, Paul George just had surgery on both of his shoulders. The first word was he might miss the start, might miss training camp. Now it's he might miss time into the season. Kawhi Leonard, obviously, last season, coming back from his quad injury, the issue was load management. He played 60 games, you know, and had sort of more limited minutes at different times. It's all worth it when you get to the playoffs, but, you know, in a situation as tight as the West might be, Seeding can matter so much, and home court advantage can matter so much, and matchups are such a big issue. So how much those guys play, how much they play together, I think the fit on the court is going to be fantastic. Only question I have is just, are they going to miss some time, and could that wind up hurting them in seeding, which could then hurt them down the road? And the Bucks, I mean, I hear what you're saying with Budenholzer. I think he addressed that a little bit last season in the playoffs. I'm thinking specifically of when he started switching those screens against Boston. The first game, the Celtics come out and carve him up with Al Horford in the pick and pop. All of a sudden, the defense that looked so good all season looked like it was going to get sliced up no matter what. And then he starts having his guys, go out there, use their athleticism, use their length, instead of dropping back on every screen, switch it out a little bit. And all of a sudden, the passing lanes and the rhythm that Boston was able to find, Kyrie Irving couldn't get anywhere, Al Horford couldn't create anywhere. And then you're creating turnovers, you're getting out in transition, and before too long, Giannis just breaking through every time. So I think that now it didn't work out against Toronto, but I think that was more a situation of that was the one guy in Kawhi Leonard who could both check Giannis straight up and go get you points on the other end. Like there really aren't. I mean, it's basically created in a lab to bust up what the Bucks were last year. That dude just left the conference, and so I'm interested. I mean, I want to see how they match up without Brogdon, because Brogdon sort of checked a lot of boxes for them. And he's not, you don't lose a title because you lose a guy like that, but a guy like that helps you win a title. And all it would have cost them was going into the luxury tax. Easy to say because it's not my money, but when you're as close as they are, losing a guy like that could wind up hurting if you don't wind up figuring out how to check the rest of those boxes with what you got left over. So I think that they right now look like the class of the East. I think Philly's not too far behind, but I'm really interested in how Philly's offense winds up coming together. And then, the Clippers, it's crazy. It feels so wild to say this after, a lifetime of watching the Clippers beat Charlie Brown and, try to go kick the football and have it get pulled away from him. But
exactly.
The Clippers right now look like they're in the best position to win the NBA championship, any team in the NBA, and that's where we find ourselves after wild offseason.
I feel bad for Danny is Ralph Lawler. All those years of pain, and when he retires, look what happens.
Seriously, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he sacrificed so the rest of the Clipper Nation can live. So, hopefully they find a way to get him back on the mic for some portion of the season and get the statue up there outside Staples before too long.
Yes, indeed. Well, Dan, this has been great, brother. We'll do this again real soon, man. A little talking ball, which I love your work up the ring. You're on Twitter, man. You're a great follower, man. Thanks again for your time today, buddy.
Oh, my pleasure. Enjoy your summer, everybody. Take care.
All right, folks. That's Dan Devine from the Ringer on the Boss Man Show.
For all your photo, video, and voiceover needs, check out the fine folks at Blu-ray Productions. They will take good care of you. If you don't believe me, you can see for yourself. Check out their work at blueberryproductions.tv, the Facebook page, Blueberry Productions, also a Vimeo page, a YouTube page, and it's Blueberry, BLUBERRY, prod on Twitter. Check them out today. Blueberry Productions, great people, great work, great service.
Hey there, your yard took a real beating this summer. Luckily, Scott's Turf Builder Winter Guard has your back. Just feed your grass with Scott's again this fall when the air is cool and the soil is warm. It's the perfect time to give your lawn a boost. If you do, Winter Guard will give your yard the nourishment it needs to help weak, thin grass recover and support root growth, giving you a greener, more resilient lawn both now and next spring. Guaranteed. Grab a bag of Scott's Turf Builder Winter Guard today. You'll be back to barbecuing in no time. This is a Scott's Yard.
Hey parents, we all try to be extra careful with our children in the car, but then we get an important call or text. Remember, our children are watching. Make every drive a good example. Be in the zone. Turn off your phone. Visit childrenshospital.vanderbilt.org/BITZ to learn more about our Teen Driver Safety Program. Brought to you by Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt, the Ford Motor Company Fund, and the Allstate Foundation.
Hello, my name is Travis Williams, President and CEO of Academics and Athletic Consulting, focusing on educating and empowering tomorrow's collegiate athletic leaders. My passion is for the education and genuine concern and care for today's student athlete. It's the centerpiece of my life's work. A college education, both in and out of the classroom, is a truly rewarding benefit. For more information on AAC, you can go to www.academicsandathleticsconsulting.com. Once again, www.academicsandathleticsconsulting.com. academicsandathleticsconsulting.com, or you can follow me on Facebook at Academics and Athletic Consulting, or Twitter at Coach TWill24, or Instagram Travis L. Williams 24, or you can call me at 404-542-6079. Once again, AAC is very proud to partner with J.R. McHenry of the Boss Man Radio Show, covering sports and entertainment across the country. Please tune in weekly for informative, entertaining, and expert analysis on today's sports and entertainment topics. Thank you.
Hip-hop fans, I got a great album for you. The debut album from Family Grind ENT, True Speech and 313 Fresh, bringing you two discs, 33 songs of pure, genuine hip-hop. Albums available on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, illstreetrex.com, and streaming live right now on Rhapsody, Beats Music, Spotify, Xbox Music, Slacker Radio, and SoundCloud. Check them out today. True Speech and 313 Fresh, Family Grind ENT. Believe in it. Get it.
A gorgeous tan from Suntan City gives you an inner glow that relights the fire when you run into your first crush.
Vicky, who is that?
An old boyfriend.
Lucky you just tanned at Suntan City.
Lucky he's single. We're doing lunch tomorrow.
Won't be single for long then.
During Tour of the City, try all 5 tans, including spray tan, for just $4.99. Restrictions may apply. Click to buy now.
When you're a teen, you finally get to make some of your own decisions. Who are you going to hang out with? What do you want to be? Are you going to glance at that text while driving? Remember, a split second is all it takes for something tragic to happen. Be in the zone. Turn off your phone. Visit childrenshospital.vanderbilt.org/BITZ to learn more about our Teen Driver Safety Program. Brought to you by Monroe Carroll Jr. Children's Hospital at Vanderbilt, the Ford Motor Company Fund, and the Allstate Foundation.
It's maybe the night that my dreams might let me know. All the stars are closer. All the stars are closer.
Tell me what you gonna do to me. Confrontation ain't nothing new to me. You could bring a bullet, bring a sword, bring a morgue, but you can't bring the truth to me.
Alexa, play Kendrick Lamar and SZA.
Okay.
Maybe the night that my dreams might let me know. All the stars are closer.
With Amazon Music, a voice is all you need. Get tens of millions of songs. Download the Amazon Music app today.
Yeah, it's your man JC, the host with the most, baby. And it goes down each and every Saturday night right here in the city of Memphis. That's right, y'all. It goes down at Clicks Sports Bar Memphis, baby. 3705 Malco Way, Memphis, Tennessee, 38125. Come out and join us, the Three Kings, each and every Saturday night for the livest karaoke in the city. Everybody gets in free till 10 p.m., only $5 after. Great food. We got drink specials. We got all kind of games, man. We got the pool tables popping. Whatever you want, we got you, man. Come on out. Have a good time with us each and every Saturday night. That's Clicks Sports Bar, Memphis.
All right, folks, back here on Gerald the Boss Man Show here with Aaron Lemon of BearReport.com covering Chicago Bears. And training camp's going on strong in Illinois right now, and Aaron's out there doing his thing. Aaron, how are things with you, man, up in Illinois, man, in Bear Country?
Oh, doing all right. I'm just glad football's finally back. It seemed like an extremely long offseason, so it's finally good to be talking some football and something to actually talk about, right?
Yes, indeed. And I know for you guys, man, how it ended, it had to suck, man. Like, you know, the double doink things that probably stuck with you guys all the whole offseason. Probably the players sick of talking about it, hearing about it. I read where Matt Nagy was showing them the video of the game all offseason long to kind of keep it fresh on their mind. So how did the guys react to the coach keeping on showing them that bad memory of what went on?
I think the big thing, especially with the locker room and whatnot, that he's really preached the entire time he's been in Chicago over this last, you know, year plus, is you can't get too high and you can't get too low. And, you know, it's mistakes are going to be made. I mean, I think a lot of people kind of assume the Bears weren't really going to be that good last year, maybe take a step up. But I don't think many people saw him at 12-4. But I think the big thing is just not making the same mistake twice. And, you know, it showed a lot. The Bears have always had a tendency to hold on to players a little too long, and I think it showed a lot from Ryan Pace, especially their general manager, to really say, hey, we made a mistake with Cody Parkey. It's time to move on. And
you know, they still don't have it solved yet. So it'll be very interesting to see how it goes. I mean, the locker room's a tight-knit group. I mean, they supported Parkey throughout the entire year, you know, through his highs and his lows. I mean, obviously his lows were a lot worse. But I think that overall it's a situation where obviously they've got to get the kicking position figured out. I mean, that's really what this comes down to. But I think it's just kind of a reminder, and this is something that Nagy's been preaching really all offseason. And, you know, last year was well and fine, and, you know, they were 12-4, and they made the playoffs and won the division. But that doesn't mean anything going into 2019. So I think that's really kind of the big key is as well as they did last year and as up as maybe they look as the team right now, it doesn't mean anything as soon as the games start being played week one. I mean, everybody's 0-0.
And Aaron, who is battling for that position at kicker? I know there's a season I read on Football Talk that talk of Robbie Gould wanting to come back to Chicago, which now he's with San Francisco. They like gave him a new deal there. So who are the guys battling for this position? And I know the games are probably going to decide who makes the roster, but who are you hearing is probably the favorite in that role right now?
Well, right now you have Eddie Pinheiro, who pretty much outright won the job in Oakland last year before he tore his groin or had a groin issue, and they put him on IR and ended up signing Daniel Carlson after he's cut from the Vikings. And then they also have Elliott Fry, who did pretty well in the AAF. So right now I think it's pretty even. I mean, they're alternating days. They've had 4 days of camp so far. And basically they've both missed one kick the first time they kicked and missed two kicks the second time. So it's just one of those situations where I think it's pretty even right now. Pinheiro definitely has more leg talent, but I think that Fry's a little bit better technically. So it's going to be very interesting to see how it all plays out. I'm honestly not overly sold that the Bears actually have their week one kicker on the roster right now. I think you can kind of look around the league a little bit and see maybe how some of these other kicking battles are going. I mean, there's some rumors that Mason Crosby may be on his way out. There's kicking competition in Tampa Bay right now with a rookie in Cairo Santos. I mean, the same thing with Cleveland. They have a veteran and a rookie in there as well. So there's multiple options that they're going to have. Plus, you know, a guy like Matt Bryan still on the free agent market as well.
Yeah, and the Falcons will regret not resigning him for sure. I guarantee that.
Yeah.
I'm trusting Giorgio Trevecchio to kick balls for me. Not a chance. Money Matt Bryant is who I would trust, but that's just me.
Yeah, the whole Matt Bryant thing's a little weird to me. I mean, he still was pretty good last year. I mean, I understand there's certain extent, you know, age and all that stuff plays into it, but as we've seen with guys like Vinatieri, I mean, some of these guys can kick into their, you know, mid to late 40s, so I don't know. I guess we'll see. I don't have as much confidence as maybe some fans do in their kicking situation right now. But, I mean, like Ryan Pace has said, they got to get it figured out.
And what's the feeling about Mitch Trubisky going into year three, having the same coach on offense 2 years in a row to get more immersed in Matt Nagy's system? So what are you guys feeling about him and his progress going into year three, leading the Bears hopefully to more bigger and better things than this year's going forward?
Well, I think the big thing is just kind of looking what he did last year. I mean, the progress was substantial versus year one with John Fox. I mean, obviously they're going, like you said, into year two with Matt Nagy and then that offense right now. And usually that's when there's a big step taken. And I think obviously that step has to be taken, especially when you account for how Deshaun Watson's looked. And obviously Patrick Mahomes won MVP last year. So it's one of those situations where, I mean, he's got to take a big step. And, you know, at least all the reports coming into camp were that he was making those steps. And I think a lot of it's mental. I really do. I think, you know, part of it was him kind of accepting his role of actually being, you know, a starting quarterback in the NFL, gaining the confidence. His leadership's come a long way. And I think the other big aspect is really it comes down to mechanics with him. And it's something that has plagued him the entire time he's been in the NFL these last 2 years, where his lower body mechanics, his footwork and his hips especially – are so inconsistent on a snap-to-snap basis, and that's something he's really got to get figured out, and especially with the deep balls. I mean, he's very inconsistent when you're talking, you know, 30, 40, 50 yards downfield. He's got a good arm, but the problem is sometimes he likes to use the arm a little bit too much, and the mechanics kind of go with it, you know, same thing with footwork. So I think really just establishing more consistency is going to be a big thing for him, because he had those moments last year where he looked outstanding. I mean, the Tampa Bay game he looked great in, the Detroit game he looked great in. And then there was other games where he looked absolutely awful. I mean, really, the first 3 weeks of the season, it was kind of one of those, like, all right, is this the guy or is this not the guy? So, again, I think, you know, mentally and obviously the mechanics of it all, but I really think it comes down to consistency and just kind of stringing good performances together. I mean, obviously you're going to have those down games every once in a while, but I think the highs need to be a little bit more consistent than some of the lows he had last year.
And the running back depth, drafting David Montgomery, you got Tariq Cohen still there, and you got Bell there as well. So the running back depth is very good. I know Matt Nagy likes to use running backs in his system to do jet sweeps and misdirections, those kind of things, and be receivers. So having that running back depth to me is going to really help Mr. Trubisky as well, in my opinion.
I think it will, too. And I think the big thing with the running backs will be actually, you know, having a good fit in there. And Jordan Howard is a good running back for what he is. And that's, I think that was kind of the thing that a lot of Bears fans maybe were a little confused about with the return when they traded them to Eagles, is he's a good running back, but in terms of fit, especially in Matt Nagy's offense, I mean, Jordan Howard is more of an outside zone runner. They're doing a lot of inside zone stuff, and they wanted them to catch the ball, and he's just not that kind of running back. And I think what they have now with Mike Davis, what they have with David Montgomery, what they have with Tariq Cohen, I mean, they have versatile guys that can catch the ball, that can block, that can run inside zone, which is going to be very important in this offense.
Yes, indeed. The inside zone and outside zone game running is a very key in the NFL these days. And what's key is also you lost Vic Fangio to Denver as he didn't come to head coach. So what's his loss been to that defense in the offseason? How do you see them adjusting defensively with Vic being gone and the system that they're going to run this year?
Well, I think in a lot of ways, I think the defense is going to be pretty similar. I mean, obviously, they're running a 3-4 base, which really in today's NFL doesn't really mean much because base package is really nickel. But, I mean, they have a vast amount of talent. I mean, if anybody's been watching the NFL Top 100, you know, or kept track of the All-Pros, I mean, the Bears have, what, 4 All-Pros on the defensive side of the ball right now, including Mac that won it a few years ago. I think it's one of those situations when you look at it. Vic Fangio is an excellent defensive coordinator, but the one thing that always kind of bothered me with him, and it bothered quite a few people, was it seemed like he kind of let off the gas a little bit, especially late in games, and sometimes maybe, you know, things would get a little closer than they should, gave up a little bit more points than they should. And I think the big thing that we're going to see this year with Chuck Pagano, I'm not saying he's a better defensive coordinator, but I think in terms of style, I think it actually could benefit the Bears a little bit in terms of the fact that he's going to be more aggressive. And it was just certain things with Fangio, like dropping Khalil Mack and Leonard Floyd back in coverage and just doing different things. And sometimes some of his decisions and some of the really just his game plans didn't make a ton of sense. I mean, obviously they put up good numbers, and I think a lot of that has to do with him obviously being a good defensive coordinator, but the talent as well. I think overall, when you look at the defense going into this year, I mean, they're returning all but basically 2 starters. I would say that HaHa Clinton Dix is definitely a step down from Adrian Amos, and the same thing from Buster Screen to Bryce Callahan. But I think when you look at the overall depth, I think the depth's a little bit better. And I think the big key to keep in mind is I think the Bears are still going to have a really good defense, but it's going to be very hard to replicate, especially the amount of turnovers and the amount of touchdowns that came from that defense last year. I mean, from a year-to-year standpoint, regardless of if you're the 85 Bears defense or you're the 2018 going into 2019 Bears defense with a defensive coordinator change, I think it's going to be very hard to replicate stuff like that. So I think that numbers may dip, and you may see them go from, you know, one of the top 1 or 2 defenses, maybe top 5. But that's kind of going back to the question earlier about Trubisky and his development moving forward. I mean, the offense has got to pick up more of the slack, especially if they're going to be a true Super Bowl contender. I mean, that's a big key. You can't have those games where the defense is shutting down the Rams and giving up 6 points and the offense can't do anything with it. I mean, it needs to be a much more balanced effort this time around. And I think it will to a certain extent, but it's just more about balancing maybe, a possible regression with the defense with, you know, the uprising of the offense maybe in the top 10, top 15 this year.
And what are some key position battles on offense we need to look out for, Aaron?
Well, I think, you know, that's kind of the funny thing is looking, and it's something that nobody's really used to, but there's not a lot of, especially when you're looking at starters, I mean, there's no real battles going on. I mean, everything's pretty well laid out right now. I think when you're looking at battles going into, you know, training camp and the preseason, I think you're looking more at depth. I think one of them is definitely tight end, the back end of the tight end depth chart. I think between Bradley Sowell, who just transitioned from offensive tackle, he was their swing tackle last year, into a tight end role, lost like 40 pounds. And then, you know, between him and some of the undrafted free agents they got, Ian Bunting's been showing up the first few days. Dax Raymond's another guy that was kind of one of their big key, undrafted free agents. And then I think looking at receiver, I think it's just more of the overall depth that they have at the position has been unreal this year, and just kind of seeing how that goes. And then defensively, I mean, there's really – I don't know if there's really that many battles, because when I'm looking at the roster, at least in my opinion, I see probably 46 to 47 roster spots, obviously barring injury, that are going to be really kind of locked in already. And I think it's really going to come down to those last few guys that maybe – aren't really even active, you know, on game day when they have the 46 guys that are active. So outside of that, I mean, obviously the real obvious one at this point would be kicker. But outside of that, I mean, they're looking to be in pretty good shape, at least on paper.
Yes, indeed. Last one I got for Aaron is this. What are you thinking of this year for the Bears? 11-5, 10-6, 12-4 again? What's your gut tell you about what you see from Mr. Roster and Matt Nagy so far?
Well, I think I do think the Bears are going to be better this year, but they're also, at least on paper, I think they're going to be in a little bit tougher division, because I don't think Green Bay is going to have quite as big of a down year. I think Minnesota is going to be a little bit better. And overall, I mean, their schedule is tougher. So the number I keep coming back to, even though, like I said, I think they'll be a better team overall, is I think 11-5 seems pretty fair. I think they can win the division with that. I think the NFC is going to be so competitive to where I think 11-5, I don't think it's out of the question that they could still get a first-round bye, and I think that should really kind of be the goal. You know, get a first-round bye, win a playoff game at least. I mean, I know a lot of people would think it's Super Bowl, but obviously we all know how hard it is for a team to win the Super Bowl. I mean, one out of 32 teams win it. So getting the playoffs and winning a game would be good, but 11-5 seems to really be that number that I keep coming to every single time I look at the schedule.
I hear that, man. Well, hey, we'll keep an eye on it as the Bears go through the season. We'll definitely call you again, Aaron. You did a great job, man. I told you off there, I love your work, what you do with BearReport.com and your work on Twitter, man. You do a great job covering this team.
Well, thank you very much. I really appreciate you having me on. I'll look forward to talking to you again sometime during the season.
Yes, indeed, folks. This is Aaron Lemon here on the Bossman Show from BearReport.com. All right, folks, back on the Bossman Show. Bad Takes, we're back. With my home girl, Jay Monique. Jay, what's good in the hood?
Hey.
Yes, indeed. She's back with us. Jay has two bad takes for you. I got two bad takes for you. Next segment we're going to talk about. So, Jay, what are the two bad takes you got for us this first go-around of bad takes?
The first one is, a driver tries to avoid a ticket by using a red sports drink as a taillight. This happened in Longmont, Colorado. Yes, Colorado police say a driver tried to replace a broken taillight with a red sports drink. The Longmont police stopped the driver Monday, who placed the red-colored bottle drink where his car's rear light should have been. Authorities say the driver was on his way to get the taillight fixed when the officers stopped him in Longmont, 38 miles north of Denver. The officers didn't ticket the driver, who was seen repairing his car later that day.
Wow. So my man tried to use a Gatorade to his taillight, right?
Yep.
A Gatorade, my dude, really? Like, come on, man. How's that going to make up for your taillight? Does nobody know that you're braking, that you're trying to back up or reverse, or you're trying to stop? I mean, really? Your best bet was to go without the light and go with that.
Exactly. But you tried to fool law enforcement with a red Gatorade drink? Oh, man. This is the limit.
That is, like, no sense at all.
Like, yeah, I'll get away with this. Let me just tape this red sports drink to the rear of my car. They'll think it's a taillight.
If it's busted, then they're going to mess with you. If your light's out or busted, or, like, it's not there, I mean, you have more liability to get over. But if you manufacturer like using, hey, let me use like a fake bell or one of fake reflector lights or something, or let me use a all sport or Powerade or something, you're screwing yourself. You're asking trouble. You're bringing attention to yourself.
Yeah, because I don't see how you can miss a red Gatorade bottle.
Right, dog.
Like, I know I'm going to see that. If I'm driving on the road and I'm right in the back of a driver who has a red Gatorade bottle taped to the back of their car, I'm going to see what it is.
I just don't know how that came about. That idea was like flawed from a jump. Like, really? Just roll the dice about the bottle. You probably would have went unnoticed.
Yeah, and I don't get it. He was going to repair his taillight anyway, so why go through all of that?
Like, come on, dude. Like, now, was he Caucasian?
It does not say.
Well, he probably was high, though. He's in Colorado. Marijuana's legal there.
It sure is.
Could have been high.
That's a possibility.
Because how else would you go with that take if you're not high?
That's what I'm going to assume, too, that he was high.
Because, but, a bad take gets an even worse take. Like, okay, the take is bad. You chill out. So, yeah, that's a bad thing to happen to you. So, it can be a bad take. But you compound the take by trying to make, how to dupe law enforcement by Gatorade bottle. Was it a 20-ounce bottle, a 12-ounce bottle, a 13-ounce bottle? Was it the big pint bottle? Which one was it? Which one did you go with, sir? Like, none of them were good ideas. None.
Nope.
So, that being said, sir, you should take yourself and jump in the nearest river in Colorado and free yourself from your stupidity and your bad takery, you jabroni. I'm done.
I like that bad takery.
Bad takery.
Yeah, you got a lot of bad takery over there.
Very. More to come. Trust and believe. In more ways than one. So what is this? What else you got, Jay, of bad takery? Because we got one that set the tone of a bad take. It's going to get something even worse, I know.
Oh, yes. Anti-vegan protesters who ate raw squirrels outside a food stall fined. The Crown Prosecution Service says the pair refused to stop after being confronted by the parent of an upset child. This happened out of London, by the way. And they're the ages of 22 and 29 years old. They began biting chunks out of the dead animals in protest at a vegan stall in Soho, London. The parent of an upset child asked the pair to stop, but they continued their protest at the Soho vegan food market. Footage of the incident showed one of the protesters wearing the animal's carcass around his neck before being handcuffed and led away by police. The pair were both found guilty of a public order offense at City of London Magistrates Court in order to pay fines.
Get rabies, first of all.
Yeah, because that's nasty. Raw squirrels?
I don't even understand when these Appalachian people eat squirrels, and I don't understand it. I don't get frogs, I don't get squirrels. I don't understand why they eat crickets and grasshoppers. I don't get these things. I don't know why there are things. People eat worms as well. I don't understand.
Yeah, I don't get it either. They try to say it's healthy. I'm not buying it.
No, I'm not buying it either. If you hang out in dirt, I don't want to eat you. If dirt's your domain, I don't want you. And if you eat nuts and whatever you can find in your squirrel, I don't want you. Nah, I'm good. Like, you're protesting, being a vegan protesting. How are you protesting? You're eating a form of meat. So how's it a protest?
I think because they're anti-vegan protesters. So they're protesting against the vegans.
Wow. I didn't know.
So they're straight up meat eaters. They're carnivores.
So I know that we've delved into the point that we've quoted. Anti-vegan protest.
Yeah, I've never heard of that either. I guess it's a London thing.
Yeah, like, first of all, if you want to have anti-vegan, just how about you fire up a grill? How about that? How about you fire up a burger or something? I'm not into pork, but how about a pork chop on a grill, or, you know, a sausage or bacon Like, there are ways to poop without eating raw, rabies, contaminated animals, potentially.
Yeah, you don't know what that, I agree with you.
You don't know what that animal has. You know? Hell, how about this? How about I pull up a rover, bring a dog, and have a dog eat the damn raw meat? They like that kind of crap.
There you go. But why should they do it? You know what I mean? Like humans eating raw. Okay, humans eating raw anything shouldn't happen.
That's why I don't eat sushi. It's raw fish. I don't trust it. I don't trust it. Like, people make fun of me because I say I want my steaks well done. I don't want to catch E. coli. Or salmonella, or whatever the hell it's called. I don't want that. All my meat.
Yeah, I don't want blood running out of it.
Like, I'm not an animal. I don't eat raw meat.
And you shouldn't.
So, I don't understand these quote-unquote protesters. I mean, that take is terrible. There are ways to eat meat and show your immediate about eating a raw animal. Now, was it roadkill or was it animals they killed themselves? Because squirrels are hard to catch, I think.
Yeah, they usually are. I mean, they run at the very sight of you.
So, I'm not understanding how they, how that came about.
Unless they actually, like, intentionally trapped the squirrel or intentionally hunted the squirrel for the purpose of doing this stupid act.
Potentially. I don't get it. I mean, this is some very much some bad takery of the highest order.
Yep, bad takery.
I'm like for real, like, I don't get the protest, though. I mean, I'm not gonna protest no vegan. Do your thing.
Yeah, neither am I. I feel like everybody has their likes and dislikes. Okay, so vegans don't like meat. Okay, let them live their lives. Just like I don't judge anybody who eats meat or eats pork and stuff like that. Whatever people want to eat, that's just them. I know that there are certain foods I prefer not to eat.
Like, much as I hate Walmart, I'm not going to protest Walmart. Much as I hate it, I'm not going to protest it.
Right.
If their people want to go shop at their godforsaken store, they can.
Of course.
I was going to be one of them. And I must say, Jay, okay, this is before I get to the next segment, but this is going to tear me alive. Oh, Lord. Walmart is promoting, they're offering quote unquote free eye exams in 2-for-1 frames. I'm like, oh my God.
Walmart glasses.
That about tore me up the streets. Come get your back to school free eye exam in 2-for-1 frames. I about lost my mind.
I bet you did.
And if anybody gets that, I'm not going to call you a loser, but you're not a winner. That's how I should say that. You're not a winner. I won't call you a loser, but I'm going to say you're winning. But yeah, like, I don't protest that store, but or their sales. Now, my protest, I'm going to leave you out a lot. That's my protest. I'm going to drive out a lot. Because you know, Jay, if I go somewhere, I don't like what I see, I'm leaving.
Oh, yeah. I know that about you. The minute you don't like something, you're leaving. You don't care if you even already ordered your food. You're out of there.
Yeah, I'm done. I'm finished. Like, peace. So, like, sorry, I'm not going to say you're a loser, but you're a winner. But these two guys right here, Jay, they need to jump in the English channel. End it for themselves because they're losers of the highest order. Their bad taker is one of a kind, and their take was worse than the first take. So, yes, it be got a worse take for sure. We started off with my man with the Gatorade, it be got a worse take in the Londoners who are eating raw squirrel carcass like the clowns they are with their whack accents over there in London. So, yeah, losers. Thank you for those two great stories. We'll come back with another bad take segment. That's sure to top what we just heard for sure. when I get you to the main event of the Bad Take segment after the break. Boss Man Show here. Check out BossManShow.com. It is the Bad Takes. They got worse, as we say they were. Bad Take Reads high at its highest order and the worst ways coming up for you next after the break.